Good morning. I'll ask our marshal to call court to order.
The Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Reyes, Judge Jessen. The Honorable Renee L. Werke presiding.
Good morning. Is it pronounced Kluver?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals and our Zoom Gov type hearings that we're having. You're the only attorney that's arguing today. I just want to, on this particular case, I want to remind you to pay attention to the clock. You have 15 minutes to present your case. Please introduce yourself and indicate who you're representing for our recording purposes. With that said, I'll ask Mr. Fink, our marshal, to call the case for hearing.
Now calling case number A200881, Evelyn Guggisberg, Douglas Kluver, versus Holly Guggisberg.
May it please the court, my name is Douglas Kluver. I represent appellants Evelyn Guggisberg and Douglas Kluver in this matter. I've previously submitted a brief in this matter that I think touches on the issues. What I'd like to go to during oral arguments is the crux of what I think went wrong as far as what the trial court did wrong in this case. It centers around the Rule 11 sanctions and the accompanying statute. But basically what a court has to find in order to award sanctions is that one of three things, whatever the claim is, it must not be presented for an improper purpose. The claim number two, the claims, defenses, and other contentions have to be warranted by the existing law or extension thereof. Or three, the allegations and other factual contentions have evidentiary support. And in this case, the only time that the court had made a finding regarding this was in its order on motion for sanctions, where the court says in finding number 9 that the court found plaintiff's factual contentions did not have evidentiary support. And what the court was referring was to her order on the motion for summary judgment that was dated August 6th, 2019. And in the order on motion for judgment on the pleadings, there is no such finding. There's no such finding that the factual contentions did not have evidentiary support. In fact, there's no way a court could even make such findings, because what the trial court was considering was a motion for judgment on the pleadings. Under those circumstances, the court must accept the allegations contained in the pleading under attack as true, and assumptions made and inferences drawn must favor the non-moving party.
So, Mr. Kluver, if I may,
Yes.
So this seems a little different than what you argued in your letter brief. I mean, you're saying there's an inconsistency between the decision on summary judgment and decision on sanctions. I mean, is that fair to say? Is this a different or?
Well, it's not really. Yeah. It's actually more specific on the argument under the substantive challenge. Just that there was no basis for this and for a finding here for an award of sanctions. The court had no basis for it. And this is, I think, the specific error the court made, where it claimed that it found factual contentions did not have evidentiary support. There is no finding. And in any event, that's not a finding. That's a conclusion of law. And conclusions of law must be supported by facts. And in this, there is simply no facts that support an award of sanctions. Procedurally, the first thing that I did in taking over this case was responding to a motion for a judgment on the pleadings. That response that I put in is what would have to be frivolous. This was, in my opinion, one of the best briefs I've ever done. It's thoroughly, if you just read it, it's the memorandum that accompanies it is thoroughly documented with facts with solid legal argument. There is simply nothing frivolous about what we've done. It puts really us at a disadvantage because the court never says, how is this frivolous? You know, it's hard for us to respond because how is, and I believe that what the court's saying is the original complaint is frivolous, but never says how it's frivolous. Which factual contention did not have evidentiary value?
So, but I think the court pretty directly said that this was barred by, the complaint was barred by the second one, by res judicata. Why isn't that enough?
Because we can bring actions, and if they're barred by res judicata, that means you lose. That doesn't mean what you did was frivolous. Now, if there was a determination of that there was barred by res judicata, and then after that we brought the same action, that would be frivolous. But there was no prior determination of res judicata. This is simply a court analyzing and coming to a conclusion, which, by the way, we completely disagree with. And according to our brief, res judicata is certainly not appropriate in this case. But that's what the judge decided, and we didn't appeal that. That doesn't mean we agree with it. It just means we decided not to appeal it. So I think it's dangerous to go down a road where, hey, if you lose, no matter how good of an argument you put forth, if you lose, you're frivolous. That's certainly not what was intended.
So, Mr. Kluver, wouldn't that then be, to adopt that reasoning, if you had one lawsuit filed that was dismissed, the same lawsuit filed, that couldn't be frivolous. It was only after the court has said, nope, res judicata, it would have to be the third same. You'd have to file the same lawsuit basically the third time before you got to a finding that could that the action was frivolous and a district court was in the discretion to impose sanctions. Is that what you're arguing to us?
That is true. Just because a person brings an action and they're wrong doesn't mean it's frivolous. And what the district court is trying to say is if your claims are barred, then you're frivolous. That's not true. Losing a case for whatever reason, whether it's statute limitations, res judicata, does not mean your action is frivolous. It simply means that you lose, unless improper purpose or the reasons that I outlined earlier, an improper purpose, the defenses or claims are warranted by existing law. The factual contentions have evidentiary value or support. In any event, there was no finding anywhere as to any of three of those reasons why you could award sanctions. So I guess I'm not saying that there could never be sanctions, but there certainly was no basis for sanctions in this case. And procedurally, going to the other issue, what had happened in this case is that there was another attorney on the case. They filed a complaint and served a complaint out. And then that attorney, after he was served a motion for sanctions, he left the representation. The plaintiff then came to my office to discuss whether I would take on the case. She then indicated it while she was pro se in a hearing that she had talked to me and that I may be taking on the case. Immediately before I even take the case, I'm served with a motion for sanctions. Well, my question is, what am I supposed to withdraw when I'm served with a motion for sanctions before I'm even into the case? But the law is clear on this, that and the judge properly stated it, that you have a duty if you take an action in furtherance of that complaint, which I didn't do. Even I filed a certificate of representation after they had filed that, And then I eventually, all I did was respond to their motion for judgment on the pleadings. There was no motion served on me telling me that my response to the motion for judgment on the pleadings was frivolous. In fact, it's clear that it was not frivolous. The summary judgment order.
If I may, Mr. Kluver, so I did read in your brief that you seem to argue, well, if my response to the motion wasn't frivolous, how can you say that this action, underlying action, was frivolous and appropriate to impose sanctions? So do you yes. have any sort of case law or support? And what's your best argument, you know, legally to set to us to say,
well, I don't think
the underlying motion response frivolous.
Well, I think that's just common sense. You can't have one without the other. If I make a non-frivolous argument to support why this action should go forward and that isn't frivolous, it just makes no sense that arguing that then it still that's not frivolous, but the complaint itself is frivolous. I just don't see how those two can exist at the same time. But the motion or the summary judgment motion is quite lengthy with a lot of findings of fact and goes through an analysis where and comes to conclusions regarding res judicata. And that's fine. But if this is a frivolous complaint or a frivolous judgment motion for judgment on the pleadings, it wouldn't seem that it would take pages and pages to dispense with the argument. That the argument obviously has merit of that has to be dealt with, and indeed had to be dealt with by the court. She couldn't just throw it out and say, this is frivolous. She had to address it. She had to address the legal issues. If you look in the response to the motion, the reason she threw the judge threw out was she basically thought, well, there was the res judicata argument, which in her motion for summary judgment, you can tell in paragraph number 24, she refers to that earlier case. And she says the court confirmed the findings, independent interim trustee who conducted an accounting determined there was no mismanagement, no self-dealing or other inappropriate action. That was the original case. It was all about a trust case, beneficiaries, settlers, and dealing with trust. It wasn't dealing with anything else. In finding 26, she says the present lawsuit is a breach of contract, unjust enrichment, promissory estoppel. Each of these claims stem from an allegation that there was an oral agreement that of which this stock transfer was only a certain piece. So these are very different claims that were brought and litigated by the judge's own findings from the two. Now you can say, well, that should have been brought at that time, maybe, but they were bringing them the initial matter as trustees and participants in a trust. The later action did not concern the trust. It concerned the breach of contract of the oral agreement, unjust enrichment, promissory estoppel. Each one of those claims is valid under law. They're valid, recognized claims under Minnesota law. So going back to what makes a claim frivolous, we know that it isn't the claim was frivolous because the claims, defenses, and other legal contentions, a breach of contract, unjust enrichment, and promissory estoppel, they're all valid under Minnesota law. And we know, and there was no finding that this was brought for an improper purpose. Nowhere in any of the documents does the judge ever say that or make a finding that way. So the only one left is the allegations or other factual contentions have evidentiary support. Well, we know the court said it made a finding, but it never did. And we also know that a court can't do that on make factual determinations on a motion for judgment on the pleadings. It's simply not allowed. if you do that, if you make a determination and not just accept those allegations as true, then you failed as far as the court's duty of what's required for a motion for judgment on the pleadings.
Can I just say, isn't that, Mr. Kluver, isn't that a roundabout way of trying to argue kind of that the district court's underlying decision on the motion to dismiss was wrong, which you're not appealing?
Right. We didn't appeal that. We didn't appeal that till the judge completely fell down on these sanctions and sanctioned us for what she made absolutely no finding was frivolous under any of the grounds of frivolity. It is a dangerous road to go down to start saying that an attorney is frivolous just because they make an argument. And that shouldn't happen. I haven't made a frivolous argument in my 17 years, and I certainly didn't here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Excellent timing. The time clock just has run down. Thank you, Mr. Kluver, for appearing in this fashion for your briefing and your argument today in support of your position. The matters are submitted and a decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe.